So Nia, the Makba's It Happens.
Christine Khoury is a Beirut-based researcher, writer, and photographer. Born and raised in Miami and Chicago, in 2008 she moved to Beirut, where she worked as a researcher for Walid Raad. Her research focuses on modern art history in the Arab world. With Rasha Salti, she co-founded a long-term research project called The History of Arab Modernities in the Visual Arts, which aims to investigate the undocumented realm of the production, exhibition, critical engagement, and consumption of modern art in the Middle East in the period spanning from the 1950s to the 1980s. Sunia talks to Christine Khoury about the traces of modernity in the Arab world and about the changes that have occurred in and in relation to the post-colonial Arab narrative as a result of 9/11 and its global consequences. She also discusses the methodology that she uses to rewrite regional histories based on the analysis of documents and the production of knowledge. The lost art of the Arab world.
It is hard to see artworks from the modern period in the Arab world. It's something that drew me towards the work that I'm doing. What in the Arab world, there aren't enough or that many museums or exhibition spaces that host work from the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, unfortunately, but that's changing. There are several museums in the process of being built and imagined in Beirut right now, for example, in the Gulf, like in Qatar and Dubai, etc. There are a lot of spaces, private collections now that are showing work. Art fairs are including modern work from the Arab world, and this is relatively new. In the last 10 or so years, people have started asking questions about it. So the challenge for me was, okay, we're seeing a lot of contemporary work. The Arab world, contemporary Arab art is very sexy, or it's become very sexy in the last 10 or so years. But what happened before? What happened before the 90s? What was being produced? What were the questions that were being asked? And the references or those national museums or modern art museums in the Arab world that should exist to host those works were few and far between. They did exist. They do exist. There is a brilliant museum in Kuwait that's sort of national gallery, and they have Arab artwork produced from the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. The same in Jordan. There's the National Gallery of Art there with work also from the Arab world, not just its own country. It's not a national museum. And in Lebanon, for example, there's no museum dedicated to Lebanese art. There's no state institution or otherwise. In Syria, there is a museum that does host some work. So there are these spaces, but they're a little bit antiquated. Even in Egypt, there's a modern art museum, but they're not the reference points. They're not the places where one goes to become engaged with modern work, because there is maybe not a critical thinking around the artwork. They're just there. They're just shown. But no one knows that context or the history of these artists or what their processes were, who they were engaging with, or what their questions were. It's very flat in terms of presentation. And, you know, that's a problem, I think, with a lot of the kind of government institutions in the Arab world in the past. You know, books were published, material was published, but the questions or kind of the criticality was not really there. So now, as an ordinary viewer, if you lived in, you know, Beirut or Cairo, and you wanted to see work, artwork, painting, sculpture, etc., that were produced in the 50s or 60s, there are very few places to go see them. And that's changing.
History and accessibility.
It's a challenge when there aren't textbooks or it's not taught in the region. I myself did not grow up in the Arab world, so that is something to keep in mind. I'm originally Lebanese, but I grew up in the States. And in college, when I was interested in looking at modern art production in the Arab world, there was no one there who had the answers or had books for me to read or had references. Sure, I started doing research online. I was able to dig up material. There is material. There was work being produced. There were compelling stories and art infrastructures and galleries and production that whose stories have to be told. And it's often about accessibility. How do you access those works, that history, and the history of art from that period is constantly being written. And it's quite new in the last 10 to 15 years that there are more academics who are writing their PhDs or their theses on particular artists on a particular period from the Arab world. So there is knowledge production now in scholarship, a different kind of knowledge production or scholarship than one can say existed in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And not to say that those academics or art critics or writers didn't do a sufficient job, but there's a different sort of criticality or questions that need to be asked about, say, not necessarily just one artist's work, but what was their relationship to political engagement? What was their relationship of an artist in Egypt to an artist in Morocco in the 1960s? What brought them together or didn't bring them together? So more and more we're seeing artworks, modern artworks, which allow people to start asking questions and tugging at a string and, you know, trying to find a library that has books or pamphlets or exhibition catalogs about this artist. So it's something that's definitely changing and has been changing over the last few years as there's growing interest. And of course, we can't forget the elephant in the room, the market.
Territory and methodology.
I've done my BA, but I'm not trained as a PhD student in, say, art history or anthropology. So my methodologies are, I think, very sensical, but also are very practical and have to be adapted to what the reality is on the ground. So when I moved to first to Amman in Jordan and then later to Beirut, the sources of information, some of which were libraries, arts institutions, so like Darat al-Funun in Amman, which is a really amazing art space and has a fantastic art library, was a great resource to be able to find catalogs from the 90s, from the 80s, from the 70s, from the 60s. And so that opened up a lot of questions for me. But then also people hold history. And so doing interviews with people and asking them about how they helped establish the National Art Gallery in Amman, how did they make decisions about certain artists that they were choosing? What was the process? People hold stories. And so oral history became a very important component to doing research, to kind of look back on that period. That seemed to be the most logical process for me, or at least methodology. So searching for archival materials in sometimes institutions, but people's homes, those people that you speak with, was necessary. It's the only way to get some information. So in addition, of course, from support from different academics who were doing research there and were able to help. So yeah, you have to adapt your methodology to try to find out what was happening at that time, whether it's adapt your methodology to find archives or to focus on people's stories and memories, which have their own complications in and of themselves, of course. But I think that's what's interesting. You know, I think if we want to write a history that's, I don't know, a traditional history, I mean, all histories are subjective. So the way one person remembers how they started an institution is emotional. It was something that they did, but it also is true for them. So that's one version of the story. And so it's in a way, I wouldn't say speculative, but there are different layers that need to be added on top of each other. And one has to acknowledge that there are those different layers and that there is not always a formal institutional history telling the story of how something happened. Yeah, so it ends up a lot of the research is spending time with people, getting their trust and giving them what you can to support them. Also, it's not just a sort of take, take, take.
Global history and regional stories.
Thinking about the Arab world, one has to think country by country. One can't say the same story happened in every country. Sometimes there are parallel stories, but they're also overlapping or engaged one country. People from Lebanon may go study in Cairo because they had an art school there earlier on than other cities. So governments at the beginning played a huge role. I mean, we have to think that, and most of my research is focused post sort of independence, you know, kind of the post-colonial period. So from kind of the mid-40s on. So there's a different story to be told about when the French were in Lebanon, you know, even when the Ottomans were in the region, etc. But in some cities and in many cities, not many, but several art schools were established. For example, in Lebanon, the ALBA, which is the Académie Libanaise de Beaux-Arts, was established, and I believe in the mid-1940s. And so that was then a place where, at sort of the beginning of an institution that hosted the formal study of art. And with that, you also have ministries of higher education. Sometimes there are ministries of culture. They turned into ministries of culture, but ministries of higher education that supported, you know, different exhibitions or commissioning work. So most often you would see the Ministry of Higher Education would have a Salon d'Automne, which was a very common kind of feature exhibition every year. Artists would submit work, they would show work, and then the ministry would buy some work. And that was how artists were supported. In Syria, that was a similar sort of structure. And so sometimes it shifted. The government still plays a role until today, a very strong role. In other places, like in Lebanon, you had a civil war that kind of broke up how that was operating. And so it shifted. And today, the government, I would argue, does not play a very strong role in funding art. And that's one thing that is a very important thing to remember. In many countries in the Arab world, the government or the Ministry of Culture is not the main funding body for the support of visual art production or exhibition. Not always the case, for example, in the Gulf region. So in Qatar, in the United Arab Emirates, the government has played a very strong role in supporting the arts, but in particular ways, in establishing a museum, in supporting residencies, sometimes kind of what would imagine a sort of old school way of support, sometimes a bit more experimental or willing to support different sorts of projects or initiatives. So often the kind of the landscape from, I would say, the 40s and 50s, and again, it's hard to generalize, and I don't think it's worth going country by country, but you had government support and a more formal kind of structure of a ministry, sometimes an art school, and individuals who hosted exhibitions. And over kind of the years in the 50s and 60s, there began to be, once there is study, and to add, a lot of artists did not study in, say, Cairo or Beirut or Damascus, but they studied abroad. There are a lot of scholarships to go study abroad. So artists were not just studying in the Arab world. Sometimes a Palestinian artist went and studied in Cairo or, you know, within the region, but also artists went and studied in Rome and in London and in Paris. So there were scholarships for that. For example, in Iraq, which had a very strong ministry of culture and sort of support for the arts, there was a museum that was established in the early 60s. What's interesting there is that the scholarships that were supporting artists to go study abroad were supported by the Gulbenkian Foundation, which is an Ottoman-Armenian foundation, and Talus Gulbenkian was known as Mr. 5%. He was sort of responsible for the selling of oil between Iraq and other parts of the world, and he decided to give back money to the country from where they took the oil or were selling oil. And so there's a foundation which still exists today. It's in Portugal. But at that time, they were supporting scholarships for artists. And so it's in, you know, one would assume, oh, the government was supporting these scholarships for artists, very well-known artists now, when studied abroad. You know, that organization was a part of that landscape. Even the museum had a hall called the Gulbenkian Hall. It's not always just the government that was supporting it. Some governments were much more rich than others and were more willing to spend money. I think Iraq was one of those places that was very important. For example, the museum that was there was a remarkable, from what I understand, a remarkable institution that hosted works, and they were very active within the community. And, you know, today it's slowly being put back together.
The role of galleries in Arab modernity.
These works were affordable, you know, for a middle-class person, they were affordable. Sure, you had to save money and save up to maybe buy a work or two, but it was within reach if you were, you know, a working couple or family or individual to be able to afford a painting by an artist who is of your generation. Now, these days, I think it's a lot harder to say that, unfortunately. So it was accessible and it was a growing culture and not only an elitist kind of experience, I think. So you see these galleries, and these galleries played a really important role during the 60s, 50s, 60s, and 70s in exposing artists to the public, as well as these institutions, you know, these kind of museum spaces. And there were a number of galleries, like I said, that showed maybe just artists from the country, not in a position of being nationalist, maybe sometimes yes, but because those were the artists that they had access to or knew of. But other galleries were showing international artists. There was a space called the Delta International Art Center in Beirut that showed Alexander Calder in the early 70s. And these come from relationships, these networks. This is how this happens. So someone happens to know someone, or they're in contact, they're able to get an artist to come show their work. So what's interesting to me is to look at these galleries and the people behind these galleries, because these people are what built these relationships between a public and a production of work, and between different artists, and were able and, you know, played the role of exposing a public to new artists, to new work from the same city or from abroad. And another type of gallery that grew, and which is particularly an interest to me, are Arab art galleries. galleries that were showing Arab art. And they said that. They were showing Arab art. We're not just showing Lebanese art or Kuwaiti art. We're showing Arab art. And so this is kind of a deeper kind of question about that period of pan-Arab nationalism, the way that artists were, or individuals built and were traveling, built relationships and traveled within the region. And that wasn't new for that time, but it escalated very quickly. There was an ability to travel that was much easier for people to go from Baghdad to Casablanca, from Beirut to Kuwait. So people became familiar with each other. Friendships formed. The Arab world is not one monolithic place, but the language is same or similar. You know, someone who's Lebanese may not really understand someone from Morocco, but they may understand the Lebanese. So it's not that they interact all the time, but there were growing relationships. And there were similar political struggles, you know, the end of a colonial period and different questions about how to think about one's own country. There was, you know, Syria and Egypt were the United Arab Republic for several years. There were formal political, you know, relationships in the region. And people obviously were traveling and meeting each other and had been before, but it intensified at that period. So relationships built, the network was becoming stronger. And this happened in the arts as well. This happened with gallery owners, this happened with artists, this happened with architects, with, you know, any individual who was able to travel or traveled, they got to know people from other countries. And so naturally, relationships developed and projects happened. A project may be showing an Iraqi artist in Beirut, showing Palestinian artists in Kuwait. And what also happened at that period was, as artists came to know each other, there was a development in the early 70s of the Union of Arab Artists. This was a place where artists said, okay, we need to come together and promote Arab art, not just Lebanese art or Syrian art or Moroccan art. And within each of those countries, they may have had their own Union of Palestinian Artists or the Union of Moroccan Artists or Union of Lebanese Artists. But this was where they said, we have to come together. We want to exchange. There needs to be more cultural exchange within the Arab world.
9/11, the new Western narrative of the Arab world.
I didn't see why people were starting to ask. I mean, it was pretty obvious why people were starting to ask questions about contemporary Arab art, because 9/11 happened. It was a perfect opportunity to start asking questions. Well, how do people think over there? And not to reduce it that much, but a little bit, that's what happens is, okay, well, let's start to look at a region that has a lot of political issues, or is, you know, politically we're seeing on TV a lot. Let's try to understand another side of it, you know, a lot of cultural diplomacy. So, you know, institutions, very well-known arts institutions, see that and want to take an opportunity to think a bit more critically about that, to say, okay, well, let's think about and look at artistic production from the same region. And let's try to come up with some interesting hypotheses and see if we're right or wrong, and try to connect it to history, perhaps. Maybe history has something to do with it. So in 2006, there was an exhibition called Word into Art at the British Museum, and it focused on artwork that had some sort of calligraphic aspect to it. It was not a regional show, but it asked questions about how writing, not necessarily calligraphy, but how writing plays a role or is interpreted in artistic production. And I think it was a relatively successful show. People seemed to react quite well to it. And at the same time, there was another exhibition opened at the MoMA in New York called Without Boundaries, 17 Ways of Looking. And I found it a very problematic show, and a lot of people seemed to agree. And it was a show trying to look at contemporary artistic production from the quote-unquote Islamic world, and try to connect it to an Islamic art history past in some way or another, which felt a little forced. I think it's a great idea to try to think about that. But the artists they chose were very well known, but they picked the most Arab looking or the most kind of identifyingly Arab or Islamic works of many of these artists. And those works really don't reflect their production or their practice in any way. There were some good works in the show, but it was very reductive. It didn't open up questions, but rather put everything back into that same box. And even the advisors on the show were mostly Islamic architecture and art historians, as opposed to curators of contemporary art. So they're trying to kind of look too far back with really trying to understand what questions were actually being asked at that time. They're trying to place it within a very particular theme. It felt very forced. So it was frustrating to see these artists and these artists' work in this context, the way that the sort of the narrative that was written around their works. It was quite disappointing. And so since then, you know, that was a very important exhibition because it was one of the first exhibitions in a big institution in the US on Islamic or Arab art. And over the years, there have been more and more of these regional shows. And this is not something that only the Arab world has had to deal with, but other regions as well. Sometimes they can be effective, but I'm personally really uninterested in trying to bring only Arab artists together and calling it an Arab art show. There are other reasons to bring only Arab artists together or non-Arab artists together. And so just recently, there was a show at the New Museum that opened, which people call the Arab show at the New Museum. And it feels a little bit passé just to keep asking these questions. You know, it's maybe it has to do with funding, maybe it has to be checked off a list that we did an Arab show, we had Arab artists. So it's a bit frustrating to see these regional shows, but why these shows are happening, for me, begs the question as to what were there Arab shows in the 60s and 70s, and why were they called Arab art shows? The reason they're called Arab art shows now feels a little bit reductive. It's very easy, and a lot of these artists are Arab or part Arab and may or may not live in the region. Not that if you live in the region, you are more or not identified as such, but these Arab art exhibitions that happened in London and Paris in the 60s and 70s were coming out of, and I don't want to idealize and say they were much more interesting or compelling, they're coming from a different place. Sure, there were political issues that were going on. Maybe that is why some of them decided to arrange these exhibitions, but there's an Arab art exhibition, an Arab art show that was called the Craven A. Arts Exhibition. I think it actually traveled to Spain in 1957. So there were Arab art exhibitions before, but the reasons that they were bringing these artists together was a very different, maybe it was a colonial reason, right? Or it was, you know, but for me, that seems a little bit more compelling to ask this question of, can we bring these artists together? Can we look at their production together in some way? And sure, sometimes you can, but it's usually more interesting when you put it into a larger perspective. So personally, I've been very interested in trying to understand what Arab art meant in the 60s and 70s. And today I'm not very interested in why people call Arab art. I just mostly brush it off. It seems lazy, you know. It's a term that's used and is important, sure, but it's frustrating at times.
Makba.cat